Chapter 22, Third Movement, Counterpoint, Capriccioso. Counterpoint, two or three melodic lines played at the same time, combining a number of individual but harmonizing melodies. Capriccioso, capriciously, in an unpredictable or volatile style. Tsunade barely pauses long enough to knock before she's throwing the door open and storming inside, letting it rebound off the wall with an almighty bang and slam closed behind her. The Uchiha is already at his feet, sword in hand and eyes narrowed, but Tsunade ignores him in favor of staring at the room's other occupant. He's also standing, a long Naginata braced in front of him and his mask pulled up. A bottle of honing oil and a whetstone discarded at his feet. But the look in his eyes isn't Sasuke's, wary and on edge. No, Yoko's eyes are anticipatory, expectant. He stares back at her like he already knows what she is going to say. Tsunade takes a breath and crosses her arms over her chest, flicking a glance at Sasuke before turning her gaze back to the Uzushio messenger. "How interesting," she says evenly. "I went to look for you at the inn, Yoko-san, and imagine my surprise when an Anbu informed me that the best place to find you would be one of my top jonin's quarters." Yoko doesn't flinch, but Sasuke straightens, his eyes hard as he slides his sword away. "I was furthering diplomatic relations with a traditional ally," he says, a touch stiffly. Tsunade takes in the Uchiha's distinct lack of shirt, the faint bruise on his neck, the way Yoko's kimono is ever so slightly askew, and the tangled blonde hair. Then she snorts loudly. "Is that what they're calling it these days?" she asks dryly, and is rewarded with a flush creeping up pale cheeks before Sasuke whips his head around to stare pointedly at the wall. A sharp thud of the metal-capped butt of the Naginata striking the floor pulls Tsunade's attention away from torturing her Anbu captain, and she looks over to see Yoko has planted his weapon on the wood and is leaning casually on it. He doesn't fool her, though. Those green eyes are one half-step shy of wild. "If you were looking for me, Hokage-sama," he says politely, "you found me." Tsunade studies him for a moment, then glances over at Sasuke. "Uchiha, assemble your team and meet in my office. Top secret, and don't let anyone detain or question you but myself or Shikaku." She halfway expects him to protest, or turn to Yoko before he leaves. But instead, something very like satisfaction settles in the lines of his face. With a sharp nod, Sasuke turns and disappears into his bedroom. And barely 30 seconds later, his presence is gone from the apartment. Tsunade is left alone with a ghost of a man she once knew, a specter from a city that should be dead, and a man with secrets more dangerous than any she's encountered in decades. Restraining the urge to rub her temples, Tsunade fixes him with a sharp look. "Generally, Uzumaki, messengers deliver all of their messages at the same time. It saves a lot of people a vast amount of confusion, don't you think?" To his credit, Yoko doesn't pretend not to know what she's talking about. He favors her with a half-smile, just barely visible beneath his mask, and instead says, "I can track his agents, if you'd like. I can even immobilize them, if only temporary, using that seal he put on them." Tsunade doesn't even want to consider what's going to happen to the dozens of traumatized, high-level shinobi who've been at Danzo's mercy since childhood. It's hardly something she can ignore, the need to deprogram and reintegrate them, but she's putting it off for the moment, at least. One migraine-inducing disaster at a time. "Can you?" she asks, refocusing her attention on the matter at hand, and the idea of Danzo's troops out of commission is a tempting one. It would make all of this far, far easier. That gets her another crinkling of his eyes, hinting at a smile. "I came along on this mission for several reasons, Hokage-sama, only one of which is my mostly adequate grasp of diplomacy." Tsunade wonders if Yoko is even aware of how much he's giving away right now, though considering the tightly bottled tension in every muscle, she rather doubts it, came along on, instead of the expected, was sent on. It's another clue, another piece in the puzzle that makes up Uzushio's return. But now isn't the time to consider it. She crosses her arms over her chest, turning the offer over in her mind, and asks, "All of them?" Yoko nods, fingers tracing lightly over the shaft of his naginata. A familiar one, now that Tsunade is looking closely. Arashi's naginata, by its many intricate seals, treasured and much used, though she can't quite recall its name. Yet another puzzle piece. "They have a seal on their tongues to keep them silent," he says. "It's a fairly simple one, though, and I can create a master seal that will link to each root member through the array's sympathetic resonance. Any change to the main seal will be reflected by the smaller ones, and it will be easy enough to shift a silent seal into one for sleep." Tsunade is good with seals. She's one of the best still living, along with Jiraiya and Orochimaru. But the way Uzushionin talk about seals, have always talked about seals, is something beyond even her grasp. Even her great-uncle Tobirama, who combined ninjutsu and seals flawlessly in ways no one else thought to, drew most of his ideas from Uzushio and their incredibly complex, beautiful fuinjutsu. There was a toy maker, she remembers, in the market when she went to see Arashi's jonin exam. He'd smiled at her, drawn a few bold, sweeping lines on a carved phoenix puppet, and brought it to life with a flare of chakra. It had danced for her, bowed and fluttered, stepped gracefully across the stand, all because of some ink and lines. Puppetry is Suna's art, but seals are Uzushio's, and far more adaptable, far more widespread there than puppetry has ever become in Wind Country. If Yoko is so certain he can do this, Tsunade has no reason to doubt him, especially after what Danzo arranged for his country. That he didn't simply take his revenge, that no one from Uzushio has invaded yet to claim their pound of flesh, speaks well to their future alliance and Uzushio's willingness to compromise, even in such important matters. "What do you need?" she asks, and the spark in Yoko's eyes becomes a wildfire, a hurricane. "Somewhere central," he says, and there's a reverberation to his voice that isn't entirely human, is something more. Not quite a growl, but an echo, an undertone of power like Tsunade has never heard before. It doesn't have to be the exact center of the village, but somewhere high with a line of sight that includes most of Konoha. The decision of whether to trust or not has passed. Without hesitation, Tsunade nods her agreement. "You'll be in the Hokage's office with me. Do you have your supplies with you, or should I send a runner for them?" The naginata drops to rest casually over Yoko's shoulder as he heads for the door, sliding his sandals on. "I have everything with me, Hokage-sama. Lead the way." Tsunade does so without hesitating. Plans are already in place, and time is right. Originally, she'd thought to take Yoko into custody, if only temporarily, so that he wouldn't interfere with Danzo's capture. But this could work out even better, if everything goes smoothly. Neji and Sasuke are both leading teams in, and with the Byakugan and Sharingan both activated, there's only a slim chance of them triggering some sort of self-destruct on Danzo's documents and labs. With all of the root Anbu out of commission, there's far less chance that one of them will manage to hit a kill switch. There's already enough blood on Danzo's hands. Enough Konoha blood, which is entirely unforgivable. She isn't about to let him add to it. This is what had Orochimaru banished. Through his own fault, certainly, but with Danzo pushing him along. This is what forced her into self-imposed exile. This is what destroyed the Uchiha, has been twisting orphans and talented clan children for decades, in direct defiance of the Hokage's orders. Even if she were inclined to be merciful, which, after even a brief summary of Danzo's training methods, she is most definitely not, Tsunade would be obligated by her position, her authority, to put a stop to this. Danzo fancies himself the Lord of Konoha's darkness, some twisted sort of shadow Hokage. Tsunade isn't about to let that go. can't, won't, could never. That's not the kind of Hokage she is, or the kind of leader Sarutobi or her grandfather would want her to be. Yoko is humming softly as he walks beside her, an old tune she recognizes as an Uzushio ballad. And over his shoulder, the blade of his weapon catches the noon light and shimmers a ghostly blue. His eyes are blazing, determination and fire and eagerness all twisted up in razor-edged knots, and she can almost feel the air ripple around them, like killing intent tightly leashed. He's waiting, but only just, allowing Konoha the first shot at their own traitor. But Tsunade has no doubt at all that if Danzo slips through their hands, Yoko will be standing by, and he'll be absolutely merciless. Saji, she thinks, suddenly, watching the gray and blue tassel sway where it hangs just beneath the blade's crossguard. Surge, that's what Arashi called it. He and Sarutobi had been well matched when they faced off against each other. Naginata and staff, fire and water, earth and wind. But Arashi had borne Saji even more faithfully than Sarutobi had his staff. The Sandaime Uzukage had carried it everywhere, from his days as a genin on. And Tsunade can't believe that anyone in Uzushio but Arashi himself would willingly bear the Naginata again. His people loved him too much, held him in too high a regard to let someone else walk around with his favored weapon. And if that's the case, the pieces connect. She knows that Uzushio was always called the Village of Longevity, but she's never really thought about it before, never considered what it might mean, combined with an Uzumaki's chakra reserves. After all, Mito looked young right up until she died, and though Tsunade only ever met Arashi face-to-face a handful of times, Sarutobi often complained about how Arashi always made him look old, even more so later in life. At the time, Tsunade had thought he was referring to Arashi's energy, his enthusiasm. But what if he wasn't? What was it Jiraiya had said when the subject was raised? He'd be over 70 right now, and as much as I admired Sensei's drive, I don't think a man of his age would have been able to rebuild his village from rubble after witnessing its destruction, and I don't think even the Storm God managed to attain immortality. But maybe it wasn't immortality per se. Maybe it was just long life. Longer than normal, even for someone from Uzushio, perhaps. But the Storm God was always strong, always unfailingly brilliant with seals and ninjutsu and spur-of-the-moment tactics. It's a possibility Tsunade can't dismiss, that this man walking beside her is the same one whom she watched at his jonin exam so many years ago. The same one who saw his city fall because of Danzo's machinations, who had to watch as his people were scattered and lost. Tsunade takes a deep breath and opens the door of her office, ushering Yoko, Arashi most likely, inside. She closes her eyes, takes a half moment to pray that Danzo will be captured neatly and without fuss, for all their sakes, and then steps in as well, and shuts the door gently but firmly behind her. 9 Anbu turn to look at her, all of them masked and armed to the teeth, and she summons up every last ounce of her convictions and nods grimly. "You have your orders. Go," she commands. And in a dark blur, they're gone. Tsunade breathes out and turns to face the window. Sometimes, to keep the tree healthy, one has to prune back the unnecessary roots. It's simple, but crucial. And these particular roots have been left to fester and grow unchecked for far too long. Necessary, Tsunade thinks, and doesn't allow herself to close her eyes. She thinks of children, of clans, of an entire hidden village put to the sword, and doesn't waver. Cut back the roots, preserve the tree, drag the shadows out into the light and burn them away. Tsunade is a grim and silent presence behind him, but Naruto forces himself to ignore her, concentrates all of his attention on the here and now, because this is it. This is the final move before checkmate, the half step before the king is toppled. This is restitution and justice. This is all of Danzo's misdeeds brought to light. He closes his eyes and thinks of Uzushio, how it was before. And perhaps the blame isn't Danzo's alone. Kiri was the sword that struck, after all. But Danzo was the hand that drew and wielded it, the reason it slipped past their shield and buried itself deep. His hands don't shake, though it almost feels like they should, as he reaches into his obi and draws out Mio's kanzashi. The bells chime softly, gently, like her laughter once did, as he twists his hair up and slides the sticks into place. Arashi-kun, wait, you'll never get anywhere with your hair in your face like that. He's never forgotten her words, light-hearted as they were, given with laughter and a gift made by her own hands. There are so many memories crowding to the fore. Mio and Yui and Shunka, Ginrei in his hospital, and the Nidaime Uzukage smiling at him. Mito watching him with fierce, fierce eyes. The sea at dawn and the marketplace at noon, and 100,000 tiny things all lost to the tides of time. Good and bad, because Naruto knows by now that there's never just one or the other. Like Kagami. And maybe after this, after Danzo has paid his dues, Naruto will be able to think of his friend without thinking of a lonely death far from anywhere at the hands of those who should have been his allies. He spreads a scroll out on the ground, 2 feet square, and marked with the beginnings of the seal he needs. It's possible he understated the effort of this seal to Tsunade, because it requires an absolutely massive amount of chakra to affect so many separate seals. But he's the Kyuubi Jinchuriki, and Kurama raised his head at the first hint of a call.
Told you that thing out in the woods was overkill,
the fox says archly. But chakra swirls around him and slides away, filling Naruto's limbs with lightness and his mind with a heady sense of power. Don't jinx us, Naruto retorts, because the day is hardly over yet. But he focuses on the larger seal before them, on the multitude of smaller seals scattered across Konoha, and feels the flicker flare of Sasuke's familiar chakra as he activates his Sharingan. Ino is with him, along with another shinobi Naruto doesn't know, and they're closing in on a knot of root members. Naruto halts his hand, with the seal complete but not yet activated, even though it feels like ripping out his own fingernails to do so, and waits for Tsunade's signal. A beat. Another. And Naruto wants to claw his way out of his own skin, because waiting is absolute agony. What if Danzo escapes? What if one of the team dies facing him? Naruto won't lose another precious person. Can't. Not when Uzushio is finally rebuilt and her remaining people gathered. Not when he finally has the power to keep them safe. To do something when they're in trouble. Now! Tsunade says, sharp and low, and Naruto slams as much chakra as he can grasp into the array, lights it up like a bonfire, and reaches. One more line, another curve, a sharp divide between two parts of a diagram, and Naruto can feel it under his skin when the root seals shift, change, and activate. On the edge of his consciousness, he can feel it when all movement stills, when several dozen shinobi drop where they're standing. Naruto aches for them, for children taken from their homes and families, and from each other, forced to fight the same way graduates were in Kiri before the revolution. Each root member has a story, a past, and now, hopefully, they'll have a future too. Now it's down to the Anbu teams and the plans that have been made. But not entirely. Naruto closes his eyes, breathes out long and slow, and opens them again. He's out the window and gone before Tsunade can even begin to see him move. Don't let him unseal his arm. Sasuke keeps those words as his mantra, hovering just outside the range of Danzo's Sharingan, and knows that the rest of his team are doing the same. Their plan is simple. The product of Shikaku, Inoichi, and Tsunade all spending the night brainstorming. Come in hard and fast, in a group, and leave Danzo no time to use any abilities beyond Izanagi. Avoid Uchiha Shisui's Mangekyo, but trap Danzo in a genjutsu just subtle enough to remain undetected, so that he'll overestimate his abilities. Killing blows only, at least until the stolen eyes are exhausted. It seems impossible, facing someone of Danzo's reputation. Neji's team is in position, Ino signs from his left, eyes narrowed as she concentrates on the chakra signals around them. Shikamaru's team is close. Sasuke nods in acknowledgement, then signals for the other member of their team, Uzuki Yugao, to get to their positions. She fades away in an instant, moving soundlessly, and Sasuke takes a short breath. He knows what Naruto is planning, even if Tsunade doesn't. He knew even before Naruto told him, honestly. There was no way Naruto would sit on the sidelines for something like this. Not against Danzo. Not with justice for his village on the line. And if they're already moving against Danzo, if they're facing such odds, it can't even be called interference. It's simply help. Tsunade will hopefully see it like that, at least. Shikamaru in position. Ino signs, dragging him from his thoughts and making him tense. And even as she finishes, there's a vast surge of chakra from the Hokage Tower. It's blue and golden and touched with red, and Sasuke knows it well. He moves before the thought even completes, and Ino matches him, Yugao on their right side as they blur forward. Danzo is halfway to the village, coming from the training grounds, out in the open without any cover, as Sasuke flashes forward, katana in hand and aimed to kill. The old man darts away, quick and prepared for sneak attacks. But from his other side comes Raido to meet him, and then Genma, low to the ground and moving fast, to catch Danzo in the leg with a neat row of poison senbon. Danzo staggers, stumbles, clearly not expecting quite so many opponents. And that's opportunity enough. Ino finds her footing, flickers through the familiar hand seals, and her body drops. Danzo stills, and Sasuke takes the opening, lunging forward with his sword leading. They've practiced this move many times, have used it before on particularly stubborn targets, and Sasuke trusts Ino's abilities nearly as much as he does his own. And indeed, half a second before he pierces flesh, Ino releases her jutsu, jumping back into her own body, and Danzo is too disoriented by the quick consecutive shifts, a bare handful of seconds in length, if even that, to evade. Sasuke hits him squarely, katana sinking deep, and casts his genjutsu even as Danzo's body flickers away. Danzo will think he slipped to the side, rather than using Izanagi. Hopefully that will be enough of an edge to give them the win. Neji whirls in, sparrow mask deceptively benign, as he lashes out at Tenketsu points, fast and fluid and impossibly graceful. Tenten half a step behind him with her Tanto in hand. They move in perfect tandem. Tenten closing as Neji steps away, and Yugao comes from behind, her hazy moon knight hitting hard where Danzo can't evade it. Izanagi removes the wound, and Danzo launches an attack of his own, taijutsu strong and devastating, and making all three fall back. But that's another eye down. The teams shift around them, as planned, and Sasuke mirrors Neji leaping to the side as Ino, Shikamaru, and Choji launch one of their combination attacks. Another eye pays the price, but a razor-edged wind drives hard into Team Ten's midst, and Ino cries out as blood blooms. Danzo follows, kunai leading as he heads straight for her. Choji and Shikamaru lunge as well, shadows flaring and Choji blurring into another flattening attack. But the old man suffers the loss of his fourth eye to pass straight through it, while Ino can't get away. Sasuke snarls, about to leap in, but suddenly there's a whirl of familiar chakra, overwhelming and as hot as the sun, and a long, blue-sheened blade drives forward, making Danzo fall back. Bells chime, bright and wild, as Naruto dives past all of them, his Naginata darting out in a wide sweep that catches Danzo on the cheek. Danzo ducks away, deflecting a second blow with his kunai, but can't avoid the black blade of Raido's poisoned sword, or the shadowy tendrils that catch him by the throat. Five more, Sasuke thinks, and trades his katana for a handful of shuriken and ninja wire. A step forward to get around Neji and Tenten as they close in, and he has a clear shot. Takes it without hesitation as Danzo hurls blades made of air in his direction. Genma catches his eye across the road, and Sasuke dodges, even as a blur of blue and gold settles in front of him and meets the futon attack with another. The two jutsus strike each other and explode, shaking the entire area and almost knocking several shinobi from their feet. But Genma, always one to take advantage of an opening, moves forward rather than back. His senbon are barely visible as they fly, but Sasuke flashes through hand seals, dodges around Naruto's back, and sends lightning sparking from his fingertips to charge the slender needles. They hit, four in a row in vital areas, and that's six eyes used. But Danzo isn't watching the rest of them, even as he tugs Sasuke's shuriken from his shoulder and lets it drop. Instead, his eyes are on Naruto, sharp and narrow and full of something Sasuke doesn't even want to try to name. "You," he says, low and deadly. "That Naginata." Naruto laughs, twisting the long haft through his fingers in a showy move meant to attract attention more than anything. From the way Danzo goes about six shades paler, it means something beyond that as well. Though Sasuke couldn't say what. "Me," the blonde agrees cheerfully. "And Saji, of course. I'd hardly go into a fight without her." The smile fades, and he plants his Naginata in front of him, not quite leaning on it, but certainly not as tense as the situation calls for. Sasuke recognizes the stance and wants to curse, because now is not the time for Naruto's "make all villains everywhere repent everything" talent to come into play. He tenses, ready to intervene, but Naruto's next words make him freeze. "Uchiha Kagami," he says softly, and Danzo's eyes narrow. There were two of them, cousins, both brilliant and both unable to conform to what the Uchiha clan wanted. You knew the elder one, right? The Nidaime's right hand, who was never quite accepted because he stood by a man who they felt had always hated the Uchiha more than any other. They rejected him, even though he only ever looked to the good of the village. You must have hated them for that, because Kagami was one of your real friends, a comrade. Danzo lifts his chin. "Our ideals were the same," he says darkly, "and nothing else." Naruto nods, as though this is a confession, and takes a step forward. "He was your friend," he repeats. "You would both have done anything for the good of the village. But the Uchiha never saw that." "They saw a traitor," Danzo spits. "One of Tobirama's weak-willed followers. It was never enough for them, what he gave. Not unless he was giving it for their clan alone. The Uchiha were too powerful to be trusted. They had the chance to serve in the name of Konoha, to help make it strong, but they squandered it." "And Kagami died for that, on a mission with two other Uchiha," Naruto says, and he actually sounds sympathetic. Not patronizing, as someone else most certainly would, but sad, kind. Danzo stares at him, his face as hard as stone. "It was their doing," he says, low and clearly still furious. "But no one saw. And no one acted, and the Uchiha who came after, who would have served their village over their clan, they also did nothing. I took what action was open to me." "Fugaku, Shisui, Itachi, and the second Kagami." That grief is more tangible, more immediate, something personal, and Sasuke remembers the memorial stone, a murmured, "The best Uchiha," as Naruto ran his fingers over a deeply carved name, and feels a flare of comprehension. He doesn't understand this idea of reincarnation, can't really grasp more than Naruto's poorly explained, "Uzushiya did something, and I remember being the storm god," which is so outlandish as to be unbelievable, but at the same time somehow just fits. But it means loss, and old friends, and an understanding of the past events that could never be gained from a history book. The diplomat's son? Yes, with his bloodline and his family's influence, he could have changed things. But instead, he devoted himself to you, Arashi, and Konoha couldn't risk his inevitable betrayal. Danzo flicks through a familiar set of seals and slams a hand down on the ground, smoke whirling up around him to choke the road. Within it, something roars. "You are the reason for his death, Uzukage!" Danzo calls, even as the smoke clears away. "He would have betrayed Konoha for you, and that couldn't be allowed. I did it for the sake of the village." In front of him, Sasuke hears Naruto let out a long, slow breath, and then the chime of bells. The Naginata rises, spinning through deft fingers, and then Naruto plants his feet in a ready stance. Chakra dances up the shaft, setting the seals carved there alight, and more rises, an aura of fierce, steady will that all but takes Sasuke's breath away. "Maybe," Naruto says, "but you did it for the sake of your Konoha, not theirs." A wave of his hand takes in the shinobi around them. "Your Konoha is a dark place, without bonds or precious people, and it lost the will of fire when you sacrificed your first innocent. It can never compare to the real thing. And since Saru isn't here to prove that to you, Danzo, I'll have to do it for him."